Hello and welcome to another installment of Soccer Pints, your one-stop shop for all things American soccer. I'm your host, Will Clark. If you aren't familiar, Soccer Pints is an American soccer podcast where we cover everything we can about U.S. soccer, Americans in Europe, Major League Soccer, and many other exciting topics. Not only that, but we like to enjoy a nice pint or two during these chats. So grab yourself a beverage and let's get into it. Earlier this week, my guest host Chris Peel and I bounced around with a few topics across U.S. soccer, including wrapping up the first national team camp of the year. We also chatted through some more transfer news and then gave a couple of thoughts into other news across the American soccer landscape. Today, I am on my own, but there are still several topics to get into, including some major soccer news that broke earlier this morning. We will get into that and what it means for U.S. soccer. We will then get back into some more transfer news for our players, and I will wrap up today with my first prediction of the year at what our World Cup roster will look like in 2026. So let's jump right into it. So the biggest news of the day, of the morning, it's early here, is that Jurgen Klopp, the head coach of Liverpool Football Club, is stepping down at the end of the season. Now, I personally know that this doesn't involve U.S. soccer, but it's a huge, huge moment in the Premier League. It's a huge moment for Liverpool fans. Obviously, it's a sad day. It's the end of an era. Jurgen Klopp has done some incredible things for Liverpool, for English soccer, for world soccer, and it was inevitable that when the news broke this morning, my phone is just pinging left and right, messages coming through, and most of them were, can we fire Greg Berhalter and hire Klopp as our coach? And I think every U.S. soccer fan would say, please, please do that. But it doesn't sound like that's going to be in the mix. Jurgen Klopp, in his announcement, he sounded tired, run down, a bit exhausted. It almost made me feel like there might be something more, maybe in his health. But who knows? I don't want to speculate. But it sounded like he just needs to step away and have some time. And I can respect that. And, you know, for me, could he ever become the U.S. men's national team coach? Of course. I'll never say never. You just never know. He mentioned he'll never manage another club in England. If you asked him today, does he plan on managing ever again? I think he would tell you no. In fact, I think he even said that in one of the releases. But would he even be a fit to be our national team coach? Let's say hypothetically the U.S. has a terrible showing at Copa America this summer, right? Let's say they fall short in the Nations League matches in March. Then you carry and transition that into the summer and the team doesn't perform to expectations, which Chris and I talked about, very high level the other day, about expectations. Christian Pulisic's expectation is to win Copa America. My expectation is for us to get out of the group, make it to at least the semifinals. But let's say Greg doesn't make it out of the group. Then what? Do we let him go? You know my answer. Do I think U.S. soccer will? Probably not. But you've got this intriguing situation where end of the season in the Premier League is in May. Jurgen Klopp steps away. He's got summer. Hopefully he goes somewhere, gets to relax on the beach, have a couple of pints. He gets re-energized. Maybe he misses it. Maybe he sees an opportunity on the international level. And the U.S. job, in my opinion, is a favorable one. You're hosting the World Cup in 2026. That seems like it would be an appealing situation. So would he be a fit? Could he be the coach of the U.S. men's national team? Yeah, he could. You never know. It would cost a lot of money. But I would want to make sure that he's truly passionate about it. Clearly, he's passionate about coaching. There, you don't have to question that. But again, he sounded like somebody who was mentally exhausted and needed time to regroup and step away. And I applaud him for not only the career and all the accolades and accomplishments that he's made, but I think more so, I applaud him for being honest, for being transparent, for doing the right thing for Liverpool fans. Clearly, I'm a Man U fan. Liverpool is a huge rival and somebody that I hope loses every game the rest of the season. But I respect them. I respect Klopp. He's one of the greatest managers in world soccer. And we've gotten to see the incredible transformations that he's done since joining Liverpool. It's been a phenomenal ride. He's going to be missed in the Premier League for sure. I hope that this doesn't create a domino effect where you see Pep Guardiola leave City and other top managers all of a sudden get out of the game. But yeah, it's a sad day for world soccer, but it's an intriguing situation that we're going to see with him being available and the potential if the U.S. does poorly this summer. Is he the guy that maybe comes in with 2 years time to get ready for a World Cup? You never know. So tough news, but I wasn't planning on, starting today's episode off with that. But, you know, you could not talk about it with us all waking up to that news. And I didn't believe it at first. I thought it was a troll. I thought it was a spoof, but it's true. Klopp's over. We've got 4 months left to see him work more magic for Liverpool. They're currently first place in the Premier League. They've got City right behind them, Arsenal behind them. Could Klopp go out on top? We'll see. All right. Well, another topic that Chris and I really spoke about was transfer situations. It's not going away. This is the final week of the transfer season in Europe. You might see a couple of people bounce around between now and the beginning of MLS season, but from a European perspective, the end of January spells the end of transfer season, and there's still a couple of guys that need to solidify their next step. We talked about Ethan Horvath. We've talked about, Cameron Carter-Vickers might be on the move. It sounds like he's going to stay with Celtic, and I think that's the smartest move for him. But Gio Reyna, he's the big topic. Earlier this week, Nottingham Forest and Marseille, so he has a chance to either go to the Premier League or to France. Both clubs have agreements with Dortmund. Now it's up to Reyna to decide what's the best fit for him. It sounds like he wants to hold out and make a move to Spain with Sevilla. Here's my thoughts. I don't think Nottingham Forest is a great fit for him. I think you throw him in a Premier League relegation battle. I get Matt Turner's there, so there's familiarity. He's got the same agent as Nottingham Forest's new manager, Nuno. His name's slipping, I'm sorry, but there's connections there. And I don't think throwing him in a situation of almost desperation for Forest to stay above the relegation line, I don't know that's great. We saw it with Leeds United with our McKinney joining in January and Aronson and Adams there. It didn't end well for them. I wouldn't want Reyna to be in that same situation. Now, it's a loan, So he's only going to be there for a few months. There's options to buy, of course, but if Nottingham Forest drops down to the championship, they're not going to spend $15 million to buy Reyna to be in the championship. Marseille is intriguing. France is arguably a step back from the Bundesliga. I would say it is. Marseille is a great club, don't get me wrong. There's great competition. It should get Reyna on the pitch. Sevilla, for me, is the move. Real Sociedad had been rumored. I haven't seen anything lately for them. But Gio Reyna has got to get out of Dortmund over the next couple of days. And I know Chris and I talked and I said, hey, I wish he would stay and fight it out. There's not room for him. It is beyond repair with his manager. And it sounds like the club, obviously accepting two offers, sounds like the club is ready to move on and get him out of here and make as much profit as they can off of him. I get that. So for me, I think Reyna's style of play is interesting. It suits La Liga for me. I think for you know, anyone who watches La Liga, I think they know that it's free flowing. It's difficult. He's got the creativity to be successful there. We're watching Luca De La Torre, who got a second goal in as many matches for Celta Vigo. We've got Johnny Cardoso playing for Real Betis now. It's a great league and opportunity for Reyna to move into. And Sevilla has had a rough season, and this would be a great opportunity for Reyna to get in there and help impact some results for them. So more to come, but Reyna has 5 days to get this settled, and he needs to make it soon. Other guys that we've seen move recently, we talked about the couple of guys, Cade Cowell and Brandon Vasquez, that made the move to the Liga MX in Mexico. Brandon Vasquez gets his first goal for Monterrey. Simple, great little smart run. It's what you expect out of a forward. Ball comes in, heads it into the goal. Confident finish. I'm glad to see it. I think any player that makes a move from MLS to the Mexican League, it's kind of a like for like. Yeah, it's different atmospheres altogether. It's difficult to play in Mexico. There's more pressure and demand from fans there for you to perform than there is in MLS. I'll argue that all day. The talent in MLS for me is much better. But the environment, if you find success there, if Cade Cowell and Brandon Vasquez find success, we watched somebody in the past, Hercules Gomez, go down there and play well. And he was around the national team. We need dependable strikers. So score goals. Doesn't matter where you're at, score goals. So good start for Brandon Vasquez. Now, I want to talk about Jesus Ferreira. This was big news this week. He had a $13 million transfer accepted by FC Dallas from a Russian club. MLS nixed the deal. And I got a lot of people coming to me saying, why is MLS stepping in? What's MLS's problem? Why do they have the final say? Why can't they let clubs be individuals? And to an extent, I 100% agree, and I think MLS should let everyone operate on their own. However, MLS did the right thing here. Legally, I don't think that FC Dallas and Jesus Ferreira could make that deal work. It's potentially, and I think Jonathan Tannenwald, great reporter, said it's a potential violation of federal law for that deal to go through. Russia is currently barred from the international money transfer market, and MLS would be aiding a Russian business owned by Lukoil, which has been under U.S. government sanctions since 2014. Therefore, MLS blocked that deal, not to not take $13 million for Jesus Ferreira, which would be an insane return, but because it's illegal. You can't send Jesus Ferreira to Russia. Dealing with an owner that has sanctions on the U.S. government right now, or by the U.S. government? And I'm not going to get into all the politics of it, but that's why MLS stepped in. Now, what's surprising is that valuation, and that there's no other clubs in Europe that have, at least publicly, hasn't come out and given some sort of valuation like that. Now, here's that other piece that I'm talking about. We talked about it with Miles Robinson making $1.6 million with Cincinnati, I think, instead of the offers that he was getting about a half million in Europe. Weston McKennie, to put this in perspective, is going through contract extensions right now with Juventus. Great season for him. He's been a top performer for the club. He's really stepped up. $2.5 million a year for Weston McKennie, one of, let's say, our top three players in this national team. Playing for one of the biggest clubs in Italy, in Europe. $2.5 million. So when we talk about these guys that potentially you're going to leave MLS and go to Europe, financially, if MLS is paying them $1.6 million to stay in the U.S., and you're comfortable with that versus going to Europe and making a third of that, or even if you're a top player like McKennie, you're only making a little bit more. I think we all think that these guys are over there making $10 million a year, $20 million a year, like we see in the NBA or NFL or whatever, but they're not. And I think that really comes into it as you deal with agents and their fees and cost of living and all this stuff. Like, it makes sense. So, you know, I don't know what Brandon Vasquez is making in Mexico, but it's pretty wild. Now, I'm going to step away from transfers. I do think Jesus Ferreira, if he can get a move out of FC Dallas, I think it makes a lot of sense. He needs to. He's not going to be in a position to make this national team if he's not. And I know that's crazy, but the one thing I think that I've liked about Greg since his return is his reluctance to include MLS players in his A squad. And Jesus Ferreira has been excluded from that. And Jesus Ferreira has always been a favorite of Greg's. But he's fallen down the pecking order of our strikers, midfielders, whatever position you think that Jesus Ferreira should be. For me, he's not a nine. And he's certainly not going to play a 10 at the international level. So he's kind of that tweener role. He needs to figure it out. And the best way to do that is to go challenge himself. He needs to push for a move away. And I'm worried now with that valuation that MLS and FC Dallas aren't going to accept anything lower. So we'll see what happens. Now, I told you I wanted to wrap things up by making my first mock prediction of the year for World Cup 2026. Before I do that, there's been some dual nationals talked about. I've had a lot of questions. I'm not going to get into questions today, but somebody brought up Cruz Medina, who has been a regular with our under-17 program. He's been a top performer in our youth national teams. U-20s, even Olympics potential, great talent. He's a dual national. He could go play for Mexico. And this week it was reported that his father was in Mexico City talking to the Mexican Football Federation about a potential switch, what that vision is, how Cruz Medina could play into this. And it sounds like Medina is going to make his one-time switch and go to the Mexican Federation and play for Mexico moving forward. If he does that, he is a Mexican player forever. Now, he's 17, 18 years old. Why do it right now? I don't know. He's going to play a big part within our U.S. youth teams. Why make the move now? He's not going to play on the Mexican senior team. He's not going to play on our U.S. national team. He's not playing in the World Cup in 2026. Maybe they feel that there's a better path for him with Mexico moving forward. And probably we've got a lot of talent. It's going to be hard to break in over the next couple of years, and maybe he is looking to capitalize sooner rather than later. But we're at a point now where this dual national topic, if you don't want to play for the U.S. national team, go play for somebody else. If you're not fully committed, go play somewhere else. I've said this before, and I will keep screaming it. I don't care if you go and choose a different country rather than the U.S. Good riddance, right? But some of these decisions happening so young for individuals, it's too early. You haven't fully developed. Have some patience. Don't just be quick to jump. If someone puts an ultimatum out there, and again, here's another thing I respect for Greg. He's never going to put an ultimatum on a player to make a decision right now. He wants it to play out, and he's won some top players because of this. But I'll talk more about the dual national situations and other individuals and why we're now in a position where it really doesn't matter if you choose this or not, because we have so much talent that we don't have to go and find these German Americans or Mexican Americans and rely on their commitments to be successful. We're in a position where we've got some solid individuals and players and depth, and we've moved so much further over the last 15, 20, 30 years. We're in a much better position. All right, let's wrap it up with my first mock prediction of the year for World Cup 2026. I'm doing a 23-man roster for these predictions. I'm quickly going to go through this. We can analyze this more in other episodes, but I was asked, hey, are you going to start doing this? And we'll probably do it at least this year. We'll do it in January. We'll do it maybe at the end of April after the Nations League in gearing up for Copa America. We'll do it at the end of the summer and maybe at the end of the year. These are somewhat silly predictions. I know there's some people that immediately after 2022 World Cup, they made predictions for 2026. Those are always going to be different. We know the solid group right now, and that's what the majority of this is going to be. That's going to change. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be players that lose their spots. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. So, 23-man roster. Let's start with the goalies. I'm keeping Matt Turner there, but I've got two surprises as my other two. Zach Steffen, joining Colorado Rapids, is going to reignite his career, and he is going to make the 2026 World Cup roster. My other one, it's not Gaga Slonina. It's actually who his backup was at Chicago Fire. It's Chris Brady, a strong youth national team goalie. I think he is going to step up and overtake some of these guys like Drake Callender or the Schulte kid that you just saw play in goal or Roman Celentano. I think Chris Brady is one to keep an eye on for our future number one goalie spot. So Turner, Steffen, and Chris Brady. In the back, not many surprises here, maybe two. Serginho Dest, Jedi Robinson, Chris Richards, Cameron Carter-Vickers, Joe Scaly or Scally, Miles Robinson I'm putting in there. And then the two guys that for me are wild cards, Caleb Wiley at left back and Jalen Neal. I've been high on Jalen Neal. I think he's going to step up. I think Tim Ream is going to finally hit father time right before the World Cup. So he's out. A couple of these other guys are out in this prediction, but it's a solid group. I think Caleb Wiley is somebody who's continuing to grow in this program and somebody that you're going to see a lot of European teams have interest in very soon. And Jalen Neal, a young center back for LA Galaxy, I can see him having a great 2024 season. I'm hopeful of that. In the midfield, I've got Tyler Adams, Yunus Musa, Weston McKennie, Gio Reyna, Malik Tillman, and Luca De La Torre. Nothing really is changing in that group. I've talked about Jack McGlynn, There's Johnny Cardoso that I mentioned earlier. We'll see what happens, but right now I'm keeping it kind of status quo for the group that we've had. Up top in the attack, Christian Pulisic, Ballo, Ricardo Pepi, Tim Weah, Josh Sargent, and then Diego Luna. He's my wild card in there. Some people would maybe throw in Kevin Paredes or someone else, but I think Diego Luna, keep an eye on this guy. I liked what I saw recently in Camp Cupcake. I liked what I saw how he ended the year with Real Salt Lake. Here's to him having a top season as well. So that's my 23. It's obviously it's a silly exercise, but someone asked me. I wanted to throw it out there. So, but that's it. That's it. Time to wrap up today's episode. Thanks again. I appreciate all the listeners out there. Thank you for the questions this week. Thank you for the support. If you have a question, please send me a message on Instagram, or you can email me directly at will.clark@thesoccerpints.com. If you have a question, if you have a topic you want to discuss, if you want to talk dual nationals, anything and everything, shoot it over to me. Happy to give you my thoughts. Don't forget to share the podcast with your networks. It always helps when you do. We've seen an uptick in downloads of the episodes, an uptick of following. Now, I don't do a very good job of marketing and advertising on Instagram and social media platforms. That's just personally, I'll get better at that. But right now, I'm not investing too much time. So your support in downloads and sharing and all that, I really appreciate it. So thank you for everybody that does that. Until next time, cheers, my friends.